Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very senior professional from Canada, Dr. Kelly Palfy. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ash. Very nice to be here.
Thank you. Dr. Palfy is an author of a book titled Men Too, Unspoken Truths About Male Sexual Abuse. She's also a registered psychologist who specializes in working with adult male survivors of sexual abuse. You know, when I first read about you, I didn't realize there was a problem of male sexual abuse till I read more about you. But let me start by asking you, Kelly, about your book. What got you interested in this subject and what made you write the book?
Well, I would have to echo what you just said. Until I was made aware of male sexual abuse, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I was supposed to be the expert at the time.
Okay.
So I was a Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer. So that's our federal police department in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I was seconded to assist in the development of this unit called the Integrated Child Sexual Exploitation Unit. Mm-hmm. Long story short, we developed the unit in response to problems that were already existing through the internet and that we were made aware of through the internet and whatnot. So we responded to cases that we were being flooded with, and these cases were huge, and we would wind up with like data that we had to review. And these were child sexual abuse cases, right? Mm-hmm. So, I witnessed, you know, firsthand, like images, video recordings of boys and girls being abused. Mm-hmm. And I was quite, to be honest, I hate to admit it, but I was shocked because I had no idea that boys were being abused. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like God turned on the lights for me, because prior to being a police lady, I had been a corrections officer. And I remember wondering, like, why are there so many men in prison compared to women? Mm-hmm. And long story short, we had an expert come and talk to us. He spoke himself about how he'd turned to substance abuse and how he was so angry and whatnot, understandably. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it started to make sense to me that boys and men do not have resources, that boys and men are struggling with sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and most of them just can't talk about it. So it was a very humbling experience to know that I was supposed to be the expert in this field in Canada, you know, mm-hmm. in our area, and I knew nothing about it. Wow. And to be honest, even my bosses, even after we like investigated some major cases, were telling me, don't worry about the boys. So that in itself was very convicting that I didn't question that at the time, you know, because, you know, in the videos, the boys look like they're willing participants and stuff. I just thought, okay, whatever. But, you know, when I take a closer look and a deeper examination, male sexual abuse is just as damaging, if not worse, than female sexual abuse. And so, yeah, so I became aware through working in that unit that male sexual abuse exists. And then I got, you know, I left the RCMP due to bullying and stuff like that. So I had my own kind of traumas that I was working through. And I just kind of recognized that, you know, like if, you know, like, I guess what I always say is like, I was a police lady with a badge and a gun and I couldn't stand up for myself. So I just became very aware of, you know, just a small part of what it might be like to be a male who's been sexually abused, not feeling like he could stand up for himself too, because I was a woman in authority, you know, you know, in Canada, women are police officers and I carried a badge and a gun. And I just, yeah, I was very convicted about that and just very aware of it. I left the RCMP and decided to pursue my doctorate degree in psychology and researched why boys and men are not disclosing sexual abuse. So that was the premise of my book, Men Too, Unspoken Truths About Male Sexual Abuse. So yeah, I just wanted to create awareness because like yourself, I had no idea. Right. And yeah, and research shows one out of every six males in Western culture, I can't speak to other cultures, but I'm kind of told that it's worse in other cultures.
Wow. Well, thank you for telling me about this, because for me, this was a complete revelation. And as you just said, your bosses said, forget the boys, you know. And my reaction may have been the same, because I didn't even imagine this happens.
Yeah.
But moving on, Kelly, What are the challenges the world faces when it comes to male sexual abuse?
One of the biggest things is that there is such a tendency for boys and men to stay silent. Mm-hmm. So in fact, most people are not aware that this is going on. Mm-hmm. So you've got the boys and men suffering in silence, yet reaping the repercussions of this, whether this, mm-hmm. you know, boys and men often turn to like excessive work, excessive sports, mm-hmm. aggression, or like become recluse when they are faced with navigating abuse. Mm-hmm. So you know, and some men will go into therapy, at least here in Canada, but usually it's for something else. Right. And then, you know, years later, years and years and years and years, years later, if they trust their therapist and they're still there, they'll make a disclosure. Mm. So I would say our biggest issue is a complete lack of awareness. Mm. To me, it's like the biggest hidden epidemic, pandemic, whatever you want to call it. It's very prevalent.
Wow. And you did tell me a few signs, but for parents, especially for young boys, what are the signs to watch out for?
I honestly think our biggest indicator would be sort of catching a predator in the grooming process. Mm-hmm. So they typically will try to spend time with their potential victim, win their affection and stuff, so that the victim appears or presents as a willing participant. So I really encourage parents to become familiar with the grooming process. I talk about it extensively in my book. You know, for example, if a adult is trying to kind of separate a child from the crowd, or, you know, I mean that children with histories of being bullied or mm-hmm. histories of lying are especially vulnerable, because, you know, that target, that offender will be aware that, you know, little Johnny has a history of lying and is not very likely to be believed. So they mm-hmm. will target that kind of a boy. Mm-hmm. You know, basically any child in need of attention. Warning signs for adults would be, you know, pay attention if your children say, I don't want to go back to daycare, or I don't like that person. Just probe a little bit deeper. I mean, it doesn't mean there's always abuse, but sometimes mm-hmm. there is. If they say, I don't like the games that they play, what kind of games do you play? Mm-hmm. Just gentle probing. Extreme changes in character are a very big indicator. Mm-hmm. So a lot of parents, at least in Western culture, have a tendency to say, oh, you know, he's just going through puberty, or he's just going through his teenage years. Mm-hmm. But typically changes even during those times are not extreme. So if you get a boy who's like dedicated to his faith and then all of a sudden using drugs and very promiscuous, I would wonder, like, could that be why? Like, what caused that extreme change in behavior? Or they were close to their mom and now all of a sudden they want nothing to do with their parent or their mom. Mm. Oftentimes when a boy doesn't want to disclose, he will distance himself from those people that he would be afraid that he might accidentally disclose to. So I really think we need to understand as a whole why boys and men are not disclosing, and try to make it safe for them in those areas.
You know, I as you were describing the various situations, I was reminded of so many times, and I've lived all over the world, I've heard parents tell boys, if they complain or if they're saying something, come on, be a man.
I've often said those very words. Absolutely. And it's a universal message, right? So, I mean, and naturally, if a boy has been victimized, they will feel like, oh, I can't tell people because people will think I'm just weak or not a real man. Yeah, absolutely. Those are very, very big reasons why boys and men don't disclose, because of biases in society, gender biases, right? That say men are not victims, right? Well, most of the time we're discussing men that were abused as boys. Mm-hmm. It does happen in adulthood though, especially with like drugs and stuff like that. Like men are date raped, men are bribed, forced, given drugs. It's crazy in today's world, honestly.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you have done a lot of work in a very multiracial society or a community like Canada. Mm-hmm. How important is culture when it comes to talking about male sexual abuse?
Well, to be honest, I haven't done a ton of research from the cultural perspective. I did just interview a First Nations Indigenous man this morning, and he was saying, you know, just he was saying like in that culture, just the profound layers upon layers of abuse. And he was saying like, you know, basically with the destruction done from the residential schools, that a lot of the people they might want to disclose to would be perceived as not being able to handle that disclosure. So they don't. So, I mean, and, you know, I've yet to talk to too many other cultures, but I hear that it's a taboo subject in most countries, in most cultures.
My next question to you, Kelly, is at what stage of a child's education should he be made aware, or he and she be made aware, that such a problem could be confronted by them?
I honestly think the younger we start with educating our children, the better. Because here's the thing. We as adults know that a perpetrator's intentions are malicious, whereas a fear is learned, right? So children don't understand that predatory nature, that, you know, the sexual nature of abuse. So I really believe that we need to educate our children, you know, things like use the proper terminology. These are, you know, like use the anatomically correct terms, and also teaching them that these are off limits to other people. And that if anybody ever tries to explore those areas or expose their areas to you, that you need to come tell mom and dad, you're not in trouble, those kinds of things. So many parents send messages to their children that you can't talk about sexual matters, and that, you know, you can't talk about, you know, you can't tattle, those kinds of things, right? So, and, you know, at least in Western culture, and I think across a lot of cultures, we force our children to give hugs and show affection to people that they might not want to. So I'm a big advocate for allowing children to have their own autonomy, right? To say, no, I don't feel comfortable hugging so-and-so, because it leaves them with that message that they can make their own decisions about who's safe and not safe, and that they can trust their own judgment, right? And the reality is the children may actually have more information than we do, because if a child has had a bad experience, they may not have told their parent about it.
And again, based on your work and research, are there specific centers or parts of the country where this happens more than the rest? Or is it rural, urban, across economic classes, you know, classifications, etc.?
Absolutely. No, it is. It's across any economic status, any race. It's got no barriers, honestly.
Very interesting. My next question is that what is the role society and government can play to be able to mitigate this big problem?
Right. Well, I think we really have to work on taking away the stigma that if a male was abused, it means he's weak, or that he, you know, or he enjoyed it, or, you know, that it, you know, anything to do with, you know, any negative connotation. Like, we have to make it safe for boys and men to come and get the help that they need. We need education. Like, another big reason boys and men are not reporting is because if their bodies respond favorably to that abuse, which is typically perpetrated by someone that they cared for, it's very confusing. So I think like role of government would have to be like, we need mandatory education. We need mandatory, you know, we need like more treatment facilities, like resources for boys and men, supports for the men that are in prison, that kind of thing, you know? I think we need education.
And what about the legal system? I know in India, we have a very strong law, prevention of child sexual abuse. You know, it's fast track courts, etc. So I know we used to have a problem, but it's being removed quite substantially.
Nice.
What are your thoughts on legislation to be able to handle this matter?
Well, it would be nice if we could make it specific in the law books for sure. But, you know, I think honestly, right from the ground zero starting point, our police need to be educated that, you know, I work a lot with police and first responders, and I've worked with policemen who tell me that, you know, they're trying to take a report of a man who's been abused and their colleagues are in the background laughing. So, I mean, we need education right from the ground up. And then, yeah, it would be great to have some precedent set in regards to, you know, not tolerating male sexual abuse, because it's typically been viewed as, you know, like Hollywood makes it like a rite of passage if a young boy is abused by an older woman. It's not. It's no more appropriate for a young boy to be abused by an older man or older woman than it is for a young girl.
Well said. Well said. And for children undergoing such abuse, there must be centers to be able to counsel them. I'd love to get your perspective on this.
Absolutely, because there are special, you know, you can't just tell a child to forget about it and pretend it didn't happen. They need to process what happened to them. They need to be able to reclaim that part of themselves that's been taken, essentially, right?
Very interesting. So one more question regarding your book and male sexual abuse, and then I'll move to a few other questions. The question is that how is it that there are a lot of underreported, unreported cases? Do these kind of cases have? How do they impact the society and the individual?
Well, I saw a quote by an educator. He said that, you know, this male sexual abuse is basically an incubator for making violence, right? And I don't disagree with that. But it's not to say that every boy who's abused becomes aggressive and violent. But I mean, there are a lot of boys and men that are strong, you know. One thing that we'll see in a relational situation would be that they may avoid intimacy because, again, if they don't want to disclose, they don't want to get anywhere near a conversation like that. So they will just dodge them completely, which will make them be emotionally unavailable to their partners. So it just presents in so many different ways. Like, you know, you can wind up with the alcoholic, the workaholic, the guy who's doing hypermasculine sports just so that he can either numb out or feel alive or prove to himself that he's a man. So I know it sounds kind of like out there, but it really does present itself in so many different ways than female abuse victims present, right? Female abuse victims know that it's okay to go get support. Male abuse victims typically try to pretend it didn't happen or rewrite their own histories, kind of thing. They try to, they even beat themselves up and say, you were weak, you were, you know, not strong enough, you should have been able to stop this. They judge themselves as if they knew as a little boy what they know as a man, and it's just not fair.
Fascinating. So, time for two more questions. My next question to you is, for a lot of my viewers and listeners who'd love to get to know you a little better, you were a police officer and then you got into this whole area of male sexual abuse and now an author. Mm-hmm. What would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Okay. Well, I did a crazy triathlon when I was 35, and I remember thinking, man, if I can do this, I can do anything. So that was a big milestone. And then getting accepted into my master's program, I still tell my clients that are like wanting to do something different than what they're doing, like, I never dreamt I could make it this far. Honestly, writing a book was a big milestone too. I mean, there was a lot. Finishing my PhD was huge, for sure. There's been a lot of milestones. But I want to say the most rewarding things that I get in my career would be, you know, probably once every 2 months, I get the most heartfelt letter from some man who's just thoroughly benefited from my book. And those are the things that touch my heart the most, honestly.
Amazing. And how wonderful. Before I ask you my last question, I am going to ask all our viewers and listeners to check out your book on Amazon. And I'll go and check it out myself as well. And my last question to you, Kelly, is that for all our viewers and listeners who have learned, I've learned many, many new things from you in our conversation today. What would you say are three lessons you would like our viewers and listeners to take away from our conversation and from your journey?
Yeah. Okay. Well, first off, male sexual abuse does exist. It's perpetrated typically by someone that the family knows and loves, someone that probably the least likely person you would ever suspect. Offenders work very, very, very hard to be the least likely person you would ever suspect. So they will be going over the top to be that helpful person that has access to your children. So I would say just the fact that it exists is the biggest takeaway. And you know that it is different than female sexual abuse in the reasons why boys and men are not reporting. And just that, you know, that boys and men are reluctant to talk about it, but if we can create a safe space, they will talk. They do talk. I have lots of clients and whatnot that talk about their abuse. So once you can create that safe space, they will talk.
Wow.
So I honestly would put out a challenge more than anything, because most of the time when I talk with someone new about what I do for my career or my writing, they will say, you know, they'll either get tears in their eyes like that happened to them, or they'll say, yeah, that happened to my brother. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows someone who is abused. We just don't know it was them.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
My challenge would be to talk about it and see the responses you get.
Amazing. Kelly, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for making the entire subject of male sexual abuse come alive, certainly in my mind. Advice or lessons, you know, be aware of male sexual abuse. Watch out for signals. I think that's very, very important.
Become aware of them. Honestly, we mostly don't recognize it over when really they're struggling with abuse.
Correct. Well said. So thank you so much for speaking to me.
My pleasure.
And thank you for all the amazing knowledge you've given to all of us. Thank you, Nita, for
your time. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.